Hi, my name is Steven.
Hi, I'm April.
This is the 3Pi² ABA Business Leaders Podcast, where we discuss topics on how to create and grow an ethical and sustainable ABA practice.
Together, Steven and I owned a 7-figure ABA practice that provided both clinic and in-home services.
3Pi² has helped over 900 ABA practices start up and expand with our comprehensive products and services geared specifically to ABA. Now, let's get to the podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to ABA Business Leaders, brought to you by 3Pi². I'm April, and this is Steven. And today we have with us a very special guest. We're so happy to have you. We have Dr. Paul Gavoni. He's spent decades helping individuals and organizations elevate their performance and improve behaviors across a wide range of industries, including education, human services, and even combat sports. Over his career, he's held roles like COO, professor, vice president, school administrator, and school turnabout manager, demonstrating a deep mastery of organizational behavior management and a passion for making meaningful impact. Paul is committed to using behavior analysis to bring out the best in people and teams. He's known for delivering straightforward, candid insights that cut through the noise, but he doesn't stop at identifying problems. He delivers real, workable solutions. With a mix of no-nonsense honesty and a good dose of humor, Paul makes complex issues understandable and actionable, earning him a reputation as a trusted and effective problem solver. Paulie is a Wall Street Journal and USA Today best-selling author. And in the world of combat sports, Paulie is known as Coach Paulie Gloves. As a former Golden Gloves heavyweight champion, he's brought his competitive experience to coaching, helping fighters achieve championship at every level, from local to international. Paulie, we are so excited to have you today.
Well, thanks for being here. I love talking shop, and I definitely try to keep things real, you know. I just think that's the way to go about it.
Yeah, definitely. I know I'm going to let Steven take the reins on this podcast because having you on our podcast was on his wish list as he's new to the MMA world, and he's here in our BCBA world, and he says he's not one of us, but he's very much one of us, even though he's not a clinical one of us. He's definitely got all the BCBA requirements there. I'm really excited. I have a lot of questions, and I have a lot that I want to learn. I'm very excited to hear more about what you guys have to talk about, and I'll just be here to join in.
Sure. Yeah, there are a couple of things that I wanted to talk about that you've done, like especially one of your more recent podcasts, but I also saw an article that you did in LinkedIn that was, I think it was like values aren't just something you put on the wall.
Yeah.
And it kind of went through a story of somebody was like, yeah, they had all the buzzwords on their website and they got all the pretty brochures, and then they went and it was like, wait a second, this doesn't match. And so it appears to me at least that values are very important to you, and I'm just curious how you use them in your life and in the business side of things, because I think a lot of BCBAs, when they start a company, they know they want to do it better, but they get in over their head really quickly, and then maybe they forget about the values that they brought, or they just didn't have a good enough, like they weren't tangible enough that they can't see when they're going outside of their values. But yeah, just
want to talk about that. Yeah, thank you. I love talking shop on this stuff. It's awesome. And values are very important to me, and we all drift from values. I'll explain it. I'm actually writing a new book called Behavioral Intelligence. It's like a playoff of emotional intelligence, and I've adapted an approach. Have you heard? Are you familiar with ACT, acceptance, commitment, yep, training, or therapy? Mm-hmm. Right. So I love the ACT matrix. I actually wrote an article with Dr. Kevin Polk. It's not a journal article. I've written a couple of journal articles. I'm just terrible at writing academically. I just like to keep things straight and real, you know? So we wrote an article for Bloody Elbow, which is like a one of the biggest MMA, you know, publications online. And it was about using acting for fighters, how to overcome fear and anxiety about it. So I'd love learning from him about the ACT Matrix. But I've taken that and I've evolved it a little bit because I'm also not a contextual behavior science person. And it felt a little bit inauthentic for me to just keep going behind the ACT stuff because I was also adding some things into it. And I kept explaining it radically, right, through a radical behaviorist point of view and a practical point of view, as you said in the introduction, that I just try to simplify things, right? So I'm going to do the same thing here with what I now call the behavioral alignment compass, right? That's going to be in this book. And, you know, so anybody can use it. So first of all, values are a preferred way of being and doing, right? So for behaviorists and us out there, you're used to this, right? Don't you do preference assessments? So we can look at what are our preferred ways of being and doing, you know, respectful, kindness, traveling. I love disseminating the science of human behavior because I love helping people or empowering people to help them to better help themselves and others. It's my passion. And everything I do right now in my work, I'm always in my passion. I'm just so fortunate to be here and so fortunate to stumble across science. Well, the next part in the compass, the values are at the top. And if you imagine the behavior alignment compass, your values become your North Star, right? So it's easy to think about that. They should be guiding your behavior. We end up having like private events. These are covert behaviors, right? Radical behaviors talk about covert behaviors. Skinner did recognize these are important to us. And they show up for us. We have thoughts and feelings and bodily sensations that show up for us. And when they're bad, we tend to engage in behaviors that allow us to get rid of those feelings, right? You think about how good it feels to get rid of anxiety, for example. That's a great feeling, you know, because nobody wants to deal with anxiety. Anxiety freaking sucks. But the problem is sometimes we engage in these behaviors and they're misaligned with our values. And we do it because of negative reinforcement. So that becomes like a self-functional behavior assessment. When I think and feel this way, it's antecedent for these behaviors, right? I'm engaging these behaviors to escape this bad feeling. Does that make sense to you guys so far?
Yeah.
And so now the what people need to do regularly is check, is my behavior in alignment with my values? But a lot of people don't recognize their values, right? When they realize that their behaviors in misalignment their values, they need to now engage in a replacement behavior. This is like a self-intervention plan, right? Or for organization, it could be shared values and, you know, where this is group behavior, right? Group design. So we have to figure out what those behaviors are, right? And in ACT, they talk about if you engage in these behaviors, they're going to move you towards your values. That didn't really make sense to me because values are not like stationary, right? And we make it very clear that values are not goals. So the spin I've put on the behavioral alignment compass, because everything is very similar to the ACT matrix, is that I say that we have to know our values, but we need to identify value-driven goals and then identify accomplishments as metrics that let us know we're moving towards those goals, right? Because that becomes the reinforcers. We can actually move towards goals. You can't really move towards values. And I think it's important. If something's really important to you, like in an organization, in your life, you set goals, right? And you identify how accomplishments that we need to engage in that are going to serve as feedback and metrics for us to let us know we're moving. Just like if you're driving somewhere, you're getting data that pumps in that lets you know you're getting closer and closer to your destination. And that data serves as positive reinforcement for you. And you can set new goals once you get there, you know? So I think in organizations too often, and behavior analysts, we make these great sayings on the wall, you know, that we're this and we're that, we're inclusive and blah, blah, blah. Well, if you value something, you measure it, right? If you value something, you measure it. So if you value inclusivity, what's your measure of that? You know, if you value respect, what's your measure of that? If you value quality, are you measuring? Are you putting it out there? And too often we're not. And too often the system is not built on the values because your system should be built from the ground up on those values, and that's going to manifest itself in the day-to-day behaviors and the measures, right? So we're intentionally looking for behaviors in line with those values so we can get those behaviors in touch with positive reinforcement, right, from the organization. And we can hire people that have aligned values, shared values, and tap into those. Now we have people that are going above and beyond even when you're not looking because it's producing value and outcomes. And a lot of organizations are trying to, like, well, we got to give gift cards or, you know, gas cards or coffee cards. I'm like, that's a great, you know, showing an appreciation for their behavior, but that's not what's not going to maintain their behavior. People, the most powerful reinforcement for people, I think, is first of all, is that they feel supported, right? They feel valued by the people that are there. They know what to do, and they know if they do it, it's going to produce a valued outcome. And I believe most people get in this field because they want to help the learners. And I believe they end up getting burnout when they're not producing positive reinforcement. Because from a behavioral point of view, that's what burnout is. You're not producing positive reinforcement, right? The effort you're putting in is not matching the positive reinforcement coming out. And therefore, you're behaving because of negative reinforcement. When we behave because of negative reinforcement, we do just enough to get by. Only when looking, we end up leaving. I said a mouthful of stuff there. You guys have been sitting quietly, you know. So did that answer your question, Stephen?
Yeah, no, it definitely does. I think, you know, that's something that definitely April talks about all the time is you need to identify your values when you start a practice so that you can embed them in your day-to-day operation. Because if it is just a slogan, a saying, you know, a lot of times what we hear from is I took a two-week vacation, finally, after, you know, 4 years. And when I came back, people weren't doing what I wanted them to do, right? They weren't treating my staff. They weren't supportive enough. They weren't helping their clients the way that I wanted them to help them. And I don't recognize this company I'm coming back to. So I think that, you know, you said it very well. It's like you need to be measuring your values through goals and, you know, key performance indicators or whatever you want to call them, to know that you are meeting those values that you started the company for in the first place.
Even when you're not there.
Even when you're not
that
there.
That you created the culture within your company, with your organization.
Well, the problem will be that when, let's say somebody comes in and somebody's like really valued, you know, very valued leader, as the organization grows, you get further and further away from the day-to-day. And if you don't have a good system in place, right, that's going to maintain the behaviors aligned with those values. Because values come back, they're like a bucket that behaviors go into, right? People are going to have big drift. And how do we maintain those behaviors? You know, well, systems do it. Again, if the system is deliberately designed to deliver positive reinforcement for value-added behavior, and it's been unpacked beginning with the end in mind, what result do we want to, you know, achieve? And, you know, what's the frontline worker, the RBT, for example, need to do to produce that result? What's the BCBA need to do to support that RBT and up the chain? All that needs to be in place, and people don't really understand how to design systems. You have a lot of people who are clinicians, and they love helping people, and thank goodness, you know, they do have that value. But there's also the e-myth, and that is they don't know how to be an entrepreneur. Being a business owner is far different than being a clinician. It's a different skill set. So no matter how well-intended they are and how whatever great clinician they are, they need to get other people to do those things. That's why they need to have a system. That's why I believe everybody needs to understand organizational behavior management. That's a big piece of it.
April and I are so honored to have Margin Keeper sponsor this podcast.
Running an ABA business comes with its share of challenges. Managing clients, staff, insurance, the list goes on.
One thing you shouldn't add to your stress, bookkeeping. That's where Margin Keepers comes in.
They're specialists in ABA businesses, which means they understand exactly what we need.
With Margin Keepers handling your finances, you can focus on what really matters, your clients and your practice's growth.
They're more than just bookkeepers, they're lifesavers in the financial world of ABA.
So for peace of mind and expert financial management,
turn to Margin Keepers. It's a decision that will lift a weight off of your shoulders.
Check out Margin Keepers at www.marginkeepers.com and see how they can help your business thrive. And what would you, like, how do you recognize a goal is meeting your values? You know, because I think that especially if you're going to tie your goals, you know, you're collecting the data, your incentive, and now you start incentivizing those goals. How do you make sure that the data that you're collecting actually measures the outcome that you want, so that it's not you're incentivizing inadvertently a behavior you didn't intend? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have to identify when you identify behaviors, right? Let's say value or respect is a value of yours, right? Well, respect looks different across different conditions, right? Across different cultures. Like literally in some cultures, you know, making eye contact is respectful. In other cultures, making it is disrespectful, right? So you need to identify the key behaviors up front, right? First and foremost. And then we have to identify, well, how are you going to measure that? So there's obviously direct observation. Can we go out and see people making direct eye contact, for example, if that's a way? Or maybe it's involving stakeholders. I think that's another way to, you know, check on respect. But I really also believe in social validity for you know, checking in with our stakeholders. Hey, do you feel like you're being treated with respect? Are people involving you in decision-making? You know, are they doing this, that, and the other? Whatever those key behaviors are at this organization that are going to be aligned with respectful behavior. And, you know, we have to, how are we treating the learners with respect? Are we involving them in the intervention which we should do? So you can really take a look at some key behaviors and make sure that we chain them up. But you have to identify those behaviors. And if they're aligned with the values, then that's the goal, you know? So you find out, all right, what kind of, we want most people in the organization feeling good that they are being treated with respect, because this certainly is a leading indicator of whether they're going to stay or not. And a lot of people say, do it for the kids, do it for the learners. But I'm here to tell you, you cannot make it about the learners or the kids or anybody if you don't make it about the employees. Because to bring out the best in the learners and our consumers, we have to bring out the best in our employees. And it's been, to me, I've done it. So if you've done this, or if anybody listening to this have done this, and if you said do it for them, but you're not thinking about the other people, it becomes like almost a scapegoat. Like, you know, you're blaming them, or it's like you got to do the right thing. Well, help them do the right thing. You as a leader are responsible for creating an environment that gets the best out of the people, just the same way we're trying to create an environment for that learner that gets the best out of them.
One thing, like, you know, I am often reminded of a post I see on social media, right? Someone is asking, how do I decrease my turnover rate? And one of the responses was, forget about it. You just have to have a robust hiring process. Oh. And it really, like, that was a kick in the gut for me, right? Like, because one of the, you know, like, if you are expecting a family to entrust you, your team, your company with their child to reduce behaviors, how you have to be able to do that with your own staff, right? So I'm just curious, like, are there any quick things that, I get that this isn't quick, but maybe
key things,
or because you don't want to take too many things at once, because then you can't juggle all of those things at once, right? So are there any, like, one or two things that you think you should start looking at collecting data on first?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, right? One of my books, or a couple of my books, now focus on this stuff. I wrote a book called Positional Authority Ain't Leadership, and I also do keynotes on it. And the point being that we can all and should all engage in leadership behavior if we're supporting somebody else below us, right? That includes the RBT working with the student, right? We want them to be a practitioner leader, you know? And so I've broken it down. You can call it four response classes if you want to look through it at a behavior analytic lens. You can call it the four pillars of leadership. I call it the four hats because I changed my hat. And I like to share that because it's like you need to put on the right hat at the right time, right? And so these hats are based in the four-term contingency. And the first hat is the leading hat. And the leading hat is about motivating operations, right? Creating a want to move towards some vision, some goal, right? Why do I you know, you need people to be involved and see what's in it for them. Why should they move to that? So that is like a skill to get people fired up about. It's a skill that I love. I love firing people up about things, man. I'm passionate about tapping into other people's passion. I love inspiring people. But it really is a skill. You need to know how to involve your stakeholders. I actually have a course on it called Motivational Interviewing, and you certainly don't have to take my course. You can go out and read books about it, but it's powerful. It's about tapping into people's values, right? Finding out what's blocking their access to those and saying, hey, if you're willing to engage in some behavior change, you know, we could probably remove these obstacles and help you produce some valued outcomes. That's wonderful. So that's the leading ad, right? Creating a want for people. But it's not enough to have a want. We have to make sure people have the knowledge and skills. So I'm going to shift my hat to the training hat. And the training hat is about skill acquisition, whether you're directly teaching somebody how to do something, or you're, as the CEO or a hired leader up the org chart, you're ensuring that there's a system in place to make sure that when people come in, we assess to make sure they have the skills, and then we make sure that we have an approach that gives them the skills, right? So the training hat is about skill acquisition. We really need to think about having stuff that builds fluency with that, with those skills. Now, what we know is that training is an antecedent strategy. A lot of times in when we talk about challenging behaviors, we look at antecedents as those things that trigger, right, those behaviors. But in the OBM world, we look at antecedent strategies, same way they come from before behavior, but they're intended to get behavior going. They are things like training, goal setting, planning, telling. They get behavior going. But what we know in the science is that it might get behavior going, but if you don't get in touch with consequences, the behavior is going to go away, right? Reinforcing consequences. So training gets the behavior going, but now I got to shift my hat to the coaching hat. And the coaching is about supporting the generalization of learned skills into natural environment. So I make sure they have the knowledge and skills, and that's more about telling, instructing. Coaching shifts to asking, what are you doing and what impact are you having out there, right? Because people tend to be poor observers of their behavior and poor observers of the impact of their behavior on the environment. We want to help them behave well enough and long enough that they see that they're producing valued outcomes. And those outcomes will take over their behavior. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah.
All right, so the fourth and final hat is the managing hat. And I called the first hat the leading hat and the last hat the managing hat purposely because people get confused or they think one is better than the other, right? So leading is an MO, training is skill acquisition. People also confuse training and coaching, right? The coaching is about generalization of those skills. The managing hat is about maintenance of those skills. Okay, so we have to maintain it. And how do we maintain those skills? Well, when you have a robust system that I go back to the beginning, that's deliberately designed to deliver positive reinforcement for value-added behavior, and there's contingency in place. Everybody's aware of those contingencies. You let the contingencies do the work. Like when you drive somewhere, there's the ultimate reinforcer, right, which we're getting to our destination. There's the immediate reinforcement that's coming through our lens. That is the lines moving by, all the signals that let you know, that serve as feedback and reinforcement to let you know you're moving towards your destination. If you start to do something that you shouldn't, like you're on the highway, you get that little rumble, right? And it says, you know, get back in line, right? That's a contingency in place. If you speed, you can get a ticket. If you speed too often, you can lose your license. You go to jail. There are all these contingencies that are built in the system, and you've accepted that because driving delivers lots of positive reinforcement for you. And that's how people need to think about these systems. But they think short term, and they forget all about the science when somebody doesn't perform to a standard, and they resort to coercion because it creates change. You know, and so we don't want that to happen, right? And we want people to keep on the behavioral lens. I call that behavioral myopia when we forget all about the science when it comes to the adults and we only focus on the learner. The principles are all the same. Yeah. So my job has been trying to bust people out of the matrix and get them to say, like, always keep your behavioral lens on.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think, like, we did some research for, I don't know, it was like 5 podcasts, I think, right, where it was I Hate My Job, right? We went on TikTok and Reddit and places that you don't want to go. You know, just the feedback that we saw from RBTs and BCBAs was, I'm not supported. Like, the one thing that is horrible to hear, but it was reoccurring, was, I'm just a warm body that lets them bill, yep. Right? Like, these are the most passionate people, right? And we're crushing them with the no support, no training, right? And so just... Yeah, I'm just wondering your thoughts on that. How do we change that environment?
Well, I mean, first of all, it makes me sad to hear that as well. And I think most of the time, even with, you know, most of the time it's people, good people engaging in bad behavior because they just forgetting about the signs. Because our industry, our prep courses are so focused on, like, in my opinion, passing the test, and they provide a limited sample of things, right? A lot of times they're providing illustrations somebody with special needs, and so it's failing to generalize their knowledge. We are going to have to connect the training world to the real world through more simulations, and simulations that provide you different environments within with which to apply the concept. What's positive reinforcement work look like with a learner? What's it look like in MMA? What's it look like in the workplace, right? What are the antecedents here, et cetera, et cetera, so that when people get out into the workforce, they can do it. And, I mean, it can be right now an analog simulation. That's fine because it's cheap to do. But, like, eventually virtual reality, it's going to drastically increase the likelihood that people are applying the concepts in the real world. Like in the MMA world, the sparring is the simulation, right? And right. if you're a good coach, you understand how to create that environment where they're just working on one or two skills at a time and then layering on other skills, so that way they build fluency with those skills. And then, oh, I can do it in the sparring. I feel good. I feel confident. I have self-efficacy. I have response efficacy. I'm ready for the real world. And just drastically increases the likelihood that they'll perform in the real world. Now, people, again, don't know what they don't know. I can tell you that there's folks like Christina Morales, who's friggin' awesome. She's a good friend of mine. She's the CEO of Piece of the Puzzle Behavior Analysis. I did some consulting with her, with my colleague. And when she understood about values and how to embed it, we'd give her a little information, and they would spend a month going back and look at their performance management piece and completely redesign it to make sure that their values, I know inclusivity is one of them, I forget, quality I think is one of them, are measurable, that they are, you can see them and it manifests itself everywhere. There's constant social validity. They're checking in with their folks all the time, right? And now she's built a culture, because she was actually concerned because other places were tempting behavior techs, and behavior techs should be our superstars, right? Yes. And they were offering them more money. She's like, I don't know how they're doing this. I'm doing everything ethical. I don't know what they're coming up with this money, right? I'm like, listen, this is going to be hard to hear right now because, you know, if they're leaving, right? Because she was getting a little bit of turnover, but people will come for the pay, but they'll stay for the culture. Yeah. And that's just what happened, right? Now they've left, and people are wanting to come back now, and the word's getting out that she has a strong culture, and she can show you that she has a strong culture. Just not talk it. She can show you how her values are embedded in to her day-to-day work. And it's just a wonderful thing. It's beautiful. And I think if more people understood these concepts and apply them, they would make more money, right? They would help more learners. They would tap into all sorts of values, but they're short-sighted. They're going for the short win, right? And the profit. I'm not saying they're all about the profit, because they got to keep the doors open, right? But I think if they stayed slow, because she paused her scaling to make sure that she built her system, right? To make sure, because she was like, I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off, you know? And you can't. You need a good system, and you need everybody to understand leadership, because we want all people, from everybody needs to understand those four components, right? Those four hats I just talked about, so they can make sure they're motivating the person below them. They can make sure that they're giving them knowledge and skills. You know, they can make sure that they're coaching them, and they're also engaging in managing behaviors. So now we've got a good system and good leadership to navigate that system. Now you get a big change, you know? So I think we got to highlight more of that stuff so people can understand that there's a better way to do things.
Yeah, and I mean, just naturally that makes it more scalable too, right? Like, because again, you have those systems in place that will tell you, hey, you're hitting the guardrails, right? Or you've hit the rumble strip, right? So you know, okay, what am I doing that is not keeping me in the middle of the road? I think too many, what I have seen happen, because we lived it, was there's too much incentive to grow really quickly, because I think it does start from a good place. I think it's like, look, I can help more kids, I can help more families if I just get a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger. And then you have no more room to micromanage, because you're working 95 hours a week, and now the system kind of crumbles in over itself, right?
Yeah, it really impacts your quality of life. I've, you know, seen people getting divorced, you know, like having high blood pressure. Don't scale until you have a system. You know, like it's in, you know, take a look at any of my talks. I show visuals on how to develop a system, you know, and there's lots of books out there you can read, lots of different people. But do yourself a favor, do your kids a favor, do your employees a favor. Understand systems, understand organizational behavior management, which will help you design your systems, which also becomes the greatest toolbox that you have for leadership, right? Equip your people to be good leaders in your organization.
Yeah, definitely. I think that is just so key. You know, one of the things that I'll get asked a lot is, you know, about turnover, and, you know, and my answer is, my short answer is you have to take care of your staff first, right? And so the question then back to me is how, right? We already offer insurance benefits. We give paid time off. We have, you know, guest cards. We have like bowling night every other month or whatever, right? You know, and it's not working. So I, you know, everything that you have just explained definitely resonates. And yes, like I could, I'm just back here like, yes, yes, like praising for them. But yeah, it's like, yeah, come on, this is amazing. And to your point, what you said, like the science works with everybody, right? Not just because you're a four-year-old with an autism diagnosis. I think that's something that we just need to even just normalize, talk about more, right? That it's not, I think we've kind of gotten, and I just say we generally from a lot of the companies that we work with, you know, that it's become such an autism focused science, but it's not, the science isn't built around autism, right? Yeah. It's for everyone.
Well, that's exactly right. And again, I think we've been conditioned. I was, in many ways, I was fortunate. I actually got certified as a BCABA back in 2004. Somebody said, hey, and I was broke, you know, so you can make $50 an hour to go get this training. I thought it was like a crisis management training, right? So I like showed up to it and I'm like, oh my God, this makes so much sense to me. It's the only, I have 4 degrees now, you know, and I did the bare minimum to get most of my degrees, with the exception of my final doctorate leadership degree and the certification. Man, I really loved learning about it. But I wasn't surrounded by behavior analysts, right? And I was a slacker. I wasn't doing research. I wasn't going to conferences, right? And so I just started thinking, like, everybody's using the science everywhere. Why wouldn't you use it? So I started doing an MMA, and I learned about OBM and doing it at schools, and to kind of find out, like, people aren't doing this stuff. I'm like, wait, what? Because I think I was not conditioned. I didn't have like a box put on me to think about those principles, because I just see we can use them everywhere, and we really need to keep that lens on. I think that comes back to the behavior alignment compass I talked about. And if you value behavior analysis, right, the philosophy of behavior analysis, you need to check your behavior to see if you're engaging in the behaviors that are aligned with that. And you'll know that. So here's a non-example, right, or example of knowing that, you know, if you're engaging in blaming behavior and you're on that side of my compass, that's definitely not behavior analytic in nature. Because blaming doesn't work. If it worked, we wouldn't be here right now, because people are doing it all the time, right? And we know that in order to get behavior change, we have to change the environment. We need to know why the performer's not performing to a standard. And that's why in all my books, I talk about the performance diagnostic checklist, because it's very simple. It comes down to a can't do or don't do, as I like to say. I don't like to say won't, because that seems like refusing. Can't do, it's a skill deficit. We got to give them the skills. The don't do gets a little bit more sophisticated, right? Could have to do with processes. Nobody's observing. They're not getting feedback. They're not seeing the impact. We're asking them to do too many things at once, et cetera, right? So there's a few more things. But we got to keep on that lens. The same way, if a learner was engaging in challenging behavior, we don't just throw an intervention in. We get to the root cause of it first, right? So we can identify the appropriate intervention. And we don't have to do anything that sophisticated. Just keep your lens on when somebody's not performing. And you, as a leader in whatever position you're at, you are the arranger of that environment. So what are you going to do more, less, or differently that's going to change that person's performance? And that shift is an important shift. When my fighters lose, the first place I look is in the mirror. Now, they might not have been eating properly. They might not have been showing up and doing their conditioning properly. But I think about, did I need to put on my leading hat more? Did I need to put on my managing hat more by having some really good system calendar for them to follow? Maybe a checklist for their eating or whatever, helping them, you know, just have a system in place for that. But I'm always thinking about what I can do more, less, or differently that's going to increase the likelihood that people are going to perform better. I don't want to fire people, which I would, you know, if I've checked off all my boxes, you know, but I feel like I failed somehow when that happens, you know. I don't want to see people quit. I feel like I failed somehow when that happens, and we just can't get everybody. I believe the average leader is going to get, you know, 70%, you know, a good leader is going to get 80%. I feel like an excellent leader is going to, you know, get 90% plus, you know, to stay, unless, you know, they're moving, and there's all sorts of different ways that things that are happening. But keep your behavior analytic lens on. It's going to make a big difference for everybody, especially you.
Yeah.
I'm curious, and you know, I know this was my experience up until about 6 years ago when I legitimately tried mindfulness, but there was no perceiving on my end, right? There was no self-awareness. I did stuff because that's what you're supposed to do, right? There was nothing more than that. So I'm just curious, like, is there some kind of, because this is, you can learn this, but a lot of people do have that difficulty of self-awareness and knowing, where did I miss that mark? Yeah. Is there anything that you recommend to help you down that journey?
Yeah, well, first I'm going to go back to my four hats because I believe they're generalizable everywhere, and I believe you can engage in self-leadership, right? So the leading in this case, what is your vision, right? What is your why? Identifying those things. You know, now it's training. Well, what skills do you need to engage in that are aligned with your why and aligned with your values, right? Because if you have a why, right, that's a value to you. That's something important, right? So what do we need to do? And now I need to start doing it, so I got to equip myself with the knowledge and skills. So if I'm not having success and somebody else is, I can look at it through my own performance diagnostic list, right? What do I need to do more or less or differently that's going to help me to have more success? What knowledge and skills am I lacking? And I might have to assess myself against a standard. I might have to look at a video model or something like that. I might have to ask people, which would be some coaching. Hey, here's what I think I'm doing. Can you tell me what I'm doing, right? Or try to coach myself by being a better observer of my behavior and the impact of my behavior. But again, you do need some standards. So I recommend getting coaching with something like that, right? Helping right. people to be more aware, because it is hard to be objective about yourself unless you have a standard to check it against, right? Then again, then there's the managing piece. Am I maintaining my behavior? Do I have a schedule in place, calendar, and am I checking things off, you know? Am I putting some naturally occurring reinforcers in place? And if you're just moving towards something, that's a naturally occurring reinforcer. But maybe I'm pausing for a second. I'm having my cheat meal or something like that, you know, to celebrate that I'm, you know, eating healthy for a while or whatever it is. But I think that I do think you got to put your behavioral hat on, your leadership hat on, and change those around. I think that if you're not producing the outcomes that you want, right, and somebody else is, right, this is performance improvement potential. That's the talk about, I forget the guy's name from, I'm so bad with names, from Human Performance Technology. And he's a legend in the field of organizational behavior management. It doesn't matter. In other words, if somebody else can do it, you can do it, right? There's that potential. You could do it as well as that person because it's just behavior. And I believe that if I can do something, anything I'm doing, you guys can do. If they're doing it, anybody can do it. You know, obviously it's genetics meets environment, right? But I think that if all things being reasonable, it means that I got to do something more or less or differently. And what do I need to do more or less or differently? So I think we need to equip ourselves with the skills and put on our leadership hat for ourselves. And sometimes we're challenged because the resources aren't there. Sometimes we're challenged because we don't have good leadership. And under those conditions, you can get pissed the way I used to and complain all the time until your wife comes over and says, man, stop bitching. After like the 100th time. And I'm like, she's right, right? Complaining about things doesn't make it any better. And we're human. Of course, we do those things. But I was caught in a vicious cycle of just thinking about that. And I either need to accept it, which I couldn't, or I need to try to change my environment, right? In order to change my environment, I decided to go back to school, learn more. I wanted to learn more about leadership, and that's why I ended up getting 2 degrees in leadership, because I wanted to understand this stuff, and I looked at leadership through a behavior analytic lens, because all these leadership theories are out there, but I believe that the science is the DNA of leadership, right? Because it still comes down to behavior, your behavior, and the real measure of the leader can be found, and this is Aubrey Daniels' quote, in the behavior of the followers, right? If right. you get the right behavior going the right way, you're going to produce the results that you want.
How much do you think that fighting impacts the way that you approach leadership? Because like some of the things that you're mentioning sound very humble, right? Like it's just, you can't take yourself so seriously, right? You have to learn from everything that you do and the mistakes that are really teachable. I'm just curious, like, do you think that made a kind of a big impact on how you approach it?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm glad that you said about learning from your mistakes. I made a friggin' bunch of mistakes, but I'm still making mistakes. I'm still screwing it up all the time, right? But I am intentionally searching for the impact of my behavior, so we all need to do that. You know, it's not about our intent. it's about our impact, right? So we have to check in with people. We have to see what am I actually producing the results. So I do that. Now, I absolutely I identify as a fighter, as identify as a behavior scientist, and they go together. And I was bullied a little bit growing up, and I've toned back on this a little bit because my bullying was like 5 times, right? But it had a major impact. And I think about some kids that get bullied every day, man, my God, you know, the resilience they have, and I feel terrible, and it hurts my heart for them. But I've seen bullying in the workplace, right, for people with positional authority, and that's why, like, my fighting has changed from, I still train at the gym, I still box, regularly, in fact. My body's not loving it so much, but there are other ways I fight, right? So if you see any of my articles, I'd say 85% of them probably come out of me seeing somebody write something stupid like you saw. And I don't want to, you know, I say stupid because I get pissed when I heard you say that, you know what I mean? I feel so bad for the people. And I think about whoever that person is, they don't get it. And I like start to feel this, like, I feel it welling up in me right now just thinking about it. Because I know that they've probably been engaging in some course of behavior with people, blaming them, doing some things. I'm not saying they're a bad person, but it is bad behavior. So I channel that fight in me to fight in a way that makes a difference in the world. And I will come back. I've been on a cruise and I've read something in social media. I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and I'll go back and I'll just spend, we're on a cruise and I'm writing for 8 hours because I can't stop because I'm so driven at it because I think that people need to learn better. But I shape it. If you look at all my stuff, and I actually had Grammarly provide me some data that was pretty cool the other day. And they told me over just the last 2 years, I've written 155 million words, right? I'm like, holy crap, man. Wow. Like, I was shocked myself to see that. But if you look at what I write, it's all positive, right? Sometimes I put a little assertive, say, hey, this is not okay, and here's why it's not okay. But I really do want to empower people to better help themselves and other people. So everything I'm doing is serving my vision, serving my mission of my vision of making the world a better place through behavior analysis, my vision of helping people to learn about the principles and apply it. That's the real dissemination when they actually learn and apply some of the principles. So, but I do take that fighter aspect into me. And I feel like there's been times where I've seen people bullying, and in my book, Positional Authority Ain't Leadership, I talk about my own shame for not sticking up for people because I detest seeing people being bullied, but I was afraid for my own job. I was afraid because maybe all my ducks weren't in the row because, you know, I was engaging in behavior that was just because of negative reinforcement. I wasn't producing things. I wasn't involved, right? So I was just doing enough to get by. But, you know, at some point in all those places that where I was seeing this stuff a lot, I ended up confronting the person when I couldn't take it anymore, right? It felt like when I was bullied as a kid, when I fought back from one of my bullies, I honestly had a thought in my mind, like, I'd rather, and this is a terrible thing, I hope nobody ever feels this way, but I felt like I'd rather die than allow myself to be bullied, right? And I've carried that within me. And at some point, when I felt shame, I'm like, I can't, I'd rather lose my job than watch somebody be treated this way anymore, you know? And so I've confronted. And sometimes I've confronted in the way that, look, I'm a fighter. I'm a big guy, you know what I mean? And I should have addressed it early on because I shouldn't have let my temper get the best of me under those conditions. But I was just so, like, you know, I can't, you know. The best thing to do is address a behavior, like, immediately. Everybody wants to ignore it, but then it wells up in you, you know. And I tried to do it in positive ways when I saw it and ask questions and shape it that way, you know. But when you see it consistently, it just, you know, I the dog came out. So, but it's only happened like that twice, thankfully. It's not bad.
Yeah, I mean, I love what you did with, you know, you had, I don't know if you would call him a social media critic, but, you know, I think it was your second last podcast where you were like, I bring him on, right? And we talked about what his, the issue he had with what you posted on LinkedIn. Like, that's a great, I mean, you kind of leaned into that and you de-escalated, right? And it was just like, he agreed with basically everything you said, right?
You know, it's funny, and I was going to make this point, of all the words I've written on social media, rarely does somebody say something silly. You know what I mean? I get a couple a year, and I always say, like, hey, listen, if you're feeling strong about that, let's come on and talk about it. And honestly, this probably happened 20 times. Only, you know, two people have volunteered to come on. And I've had people actually correct me privately, and I love those people, and yeah. I appreciate it, because I don't think they're trying to pull me down, right? What they're giving me is really great feedback, and I say, I really appreciate that feedback, and I really appreciate how you delivered it to me. Then I've had people like, even most recently, actually when I first wrote Positional Authority and Leadership, I talk about Ask Clown Behavior, right? And Ask Clown Behavior is an acronym. It's fun. I have fun with it. And one of the Ask Clowns Behavior is for people to reflect on their own behavior, because we all engage in this behavior sometimes, okay? The more you engage in it, the bigger the Ask Clown you are, you know? But it's just behavior, right? Just to remind everybody. And that is correcting people publicly and using it as a lesson for other people. And so in my book, as I was wrapping it up, I ended up doing an epilogue, right? And because I had posted an article, I'm not going to say where it was or anything about it, right? But the article was an important article. I thought it had a lot of good information to share with people. It was about helping people. And somebody came on and corrected me, and a very well-known individual. And because I said this data instead of those data, okay? And now I use the term this data because I speak in language that's common for people. Those data are something that will be used in academics, okay? And Bosun did research on this, right? And so I was corrected publicly with it. And I said, okay, hey, thanks for that feedback. I appreciate it. Would love to have you on my podcast. That was my response to it. But the individual then took that feedback, that public feedback from me, and put it on their own page. So not only do you correct me publicly, right? Now you put it on your own page. I'm like, I don't think that's the right thing to do. Now, right. I messaged him privately on that, right? But I originally went back to my book, and as I was doing the epilogue, and I explained in too much detail what I just explained to you, because I'm like, somebody's going to be able to find this. And my goal was not to shame the person, right? My goal was to make this a lesson. I thought about, as I'm doing this, I'm engaging in Ask Clown behavior right now. I am doing exactly what I said in the book not to do, because I'm publicly correcting him, right? So two wrongs don't make him right. So this comes back to the awareness and the alignment. I had to check my behavior against what my values were in this moment. Be aware, like, man, I literally had published the book. I had to quick get on my formatter, and he had open up like, I need this changed. I'll pay you whatever you need to do. I need to change this because this is misaligned with my values. So we all suffer from it.
Yeah, I think social media kind of brings out the worst in us sometimes, right? Like, it's just so easy to take a post the wrong way, right? And then just cast your own judgment on it.
I find that people... if I notice a pattern of people correcting my stuff, like, great, if you don't agree with something, wonderful. Again, it's very rare. Most posts are very positive on things. But if all you're doing is, like, correcting, and you're not dropping, like, acknowledging something or agreeing with something, I start to wonder why. Like, what is the real function of your behavior, you know? So...
I'm really trying to keep my questions at a minimum because we both have our guests on that we're like just like dying to have conversations with. So, but I keep coming back to everything that you're saying. I just keep coming back to this thing. So I feel like I really need to ask it. And it may seem basic, and maybe it's just the way my brain's working, but I'm assuming that other people may have the same thought. So looking at viewing all of life, let's say with your behavior lens, right? And especially looking at if you're an owner, a leader within the company, and you have employees, and you're looking at shaping and changing their behavior and creating this environment and all of that, right? Especially in the early intervention piece, working with kids with autism, when we're looking at behavior, we're really focused on the main functions in a very concrete way. How does that interpret out into the world, right? We're not like going to sit down and have like a functional behavior analysis and intensive, you know, with each person, right? No. And determine, oh, this is for sure escape, you know, maintained. And this is, you know, like, what does that look like just out in the world?
I literally just keep on. So like, just like I see things in this behavioral alignment compass, like, oh, I'm in the right quadrant or I'm in the left quadrant, right? Yeah. I see performance issues through a PDC lens. And the performance diagnostic checklist, it's simple. It's two pages, right? It's the four-term contingency. And I think about, why are they not doing what they should be doing? And there's a reason. That doesn't mean my emotions aren't there. Right. I get pissed, right? They're not doing this, right? But I have to stay in line with my values. And I have to think about what's going to be the impact of my behavior if I go out there and say, you need to do this and blah, blah, blah. It's not that I would never do that. If you do it, you better make sure that you have an environment that's been rich with positive reinforcement for value-added behavior. So people always say, well, you should never punish. That's bullshit. You know what I mean? People don't like the term punishment, right? And we can use the term correction, but that's a package, right? Punishment is just a stimulus that decreases the future occurrence of behavior. It happens all the time in the world, okay? It's gotten a bad rap. The issue isn't with punishment. It's with the misuse and overuse of punishment in an environment that's not rich with positive reinforcement for value-added behavior. Now, I don't mind saying the word correction, you know what I mean? Because, again, people think punishment is this, and I get the point, right? But I don't want people to think it's not okay to correct behavior. You need to. That's not the issue. But when you're correcting it, you better make sure you're checking off the list that I've made sure that, you know, they have a process in place, that they remind because it's new, right? I've got on my behavior list. I've observed them. I'm getting the feedback. Some of my processes when I'm in organizations is that I'm really big on getting people to self-monitor and report out because we can't see everything they're doing all the time. If we've trained them well, this becomes part of the coaching approach and where they're taking a look at what they're doing and the impact that they're having and they're reporting out. And now I come every so often and I do inter-observer agreement, right? This is all part of our science, right? I'm just checking to see if what you're reporting out is what I'm seeing. I'm giving you feedback on it. Hey, great, well done. Or I'm asking you a question. Tell me a little bit more about this. You mentioned you did this, that, and the other. Tell me exactly what you did, right? And that way it gives me a chance to positively reinforce what they're doing well and maybe shape up some other behaviors because we can't be there seeing people do stuff all the time. It's one of the things that there's a big hole. Like I teach at Endicott, it was a great course. A lot of it's built on Aubrey Daniels' work and OBM, right? Mm-hmm. And he talks about how you have to deliver positive reinforcement immediately. But let's be real. What are you going to do? Just give Skittles all the time? It's not like a kid, right? We're not doing discrete trials. Mm-hmm. So we, again, the positive reinforcement is going to be like people feel valued. And at the end of the day, people want to know that they've done the things that they need to do and they're producing the desired outcome, right? So helping people see that when you engage in this behavior, the learner gets better. You know, your supervisor is happier, you know. You feel better about this. That's what's going to keep their behavior going and keep them there. So I don't know. I hope I answered your question with that. But the simple way is through the PDC lens and just keeping that simple lens on. There's a reason they're not doing it. So you have to check yourself. If you believe in behavior analysis, then you have to understand that it's the environment that we need to change. And as the manager of that environment, right, the controller of that environment, what do I need to do more or less or differently?
Right. No, that did answer my question. It's me personally, and I think a lot of other people in that autism early intervention type thing. It's like, it's hard to think outside the box. And so the more that a few years ago I joined Stephen in this venture and, you know, helping to consult other ABA companies. And as we built and grew our ABA agency and I learned how to, lead people and be in management and business and all of that stuff that I had no clue. I never had I babysat until I went to college, and then I found ABA in my freshman year of college, and then I went to, like, I never had a real job, like, not that this isn't a real job, but like a corporate, you know, right. Like I never worked outside of this field. I never worked at a store or a restaurant or anything, and so there was some learning curve there. Like only bosses I had were like the parents that were babysit, you know, so it was like a whole culture that I had to learn too. But that has really, you know, the last few years has really pushed me, and having a company as well, like really pushed me to look outside of the box and see, looking back at my time and having our ABA agency, there's a lot of things that I'm learning as we're learning more too, and getting to talk to amazing professionals and experts in the field. I catch myself often going, oh, I wish I could go back. These are the things I would do differently. And we can't. So what I'm doing is paying it forward and helping to spread that information and, you know, to have those conversations. Because one of the biggest things that I value is collaborating. And I think that's something in our field we don't do enough. And so I just love these conversations because I feel like it's at least gets that going, gets the conversation going a little bit.
Yeah, agreed. And I'll say And we're coming up on our time here, but
yeah.
I know that if we keep everything we want behavior analysts or RBTs to do with learners, we need to do with the adults, right? So that RBT that's coming into the job, right? We should be dropping them the job without assessing their competency when they come in. What can they do and what can't they do? Because if that's what they need to do to be successful in their job, we're going to put them in there. They're going to do all sorts of things that are not correct. And that means they're going to get in touch with probably aversive outcomes, right? And it's going to make them want to leave. And then we're going to start judging them, doing all those things, right? So we need to make sure that we do that for the RBTs, the BCBAs. And yes, I know it slows down the process, but it's going slow to go fast and it's going slow to maintain. As a fighter, the first day I walked in the ring, I was dropped into the ring, gym. I was dropped into the ring with a professional fighter, and he beat the shit out of me. He broke my nose, and I just got it fixed 3 years ago. Okay? And the what we learned from this is that how many potential world champions, in this case is what I thought, walked into the gym, took a beating the way that I did, and never came back thinking that they didn't have what it took to be successful. It had nothing to do with them. It had to do with the environment that they were dropped into. And we're dropping our RBTs, our BCBAs, our directors who have just got certified, you know, into these positions, and they're not qualified. They don't know how to lead. They haven't been provided with OBM skills and knowledge. Just because an RBT passes a 40-hour course does not mean, I gain certain, they are not ready to work with that learner. The BCBA, just because they have a certification and now they're getting supervised, those supervisors aren't getting OBM, right? They're not getting the simulations I was talking about. Right. They're doing the best they can. They're well-intended. But now we just, it's a bad cycle of performance management there. And this is why we get people leaving all the time, because they're forgetting about using the science as business. And business is behavior, right? Yep. So we need to keep our lens on.
I say we ended there.
Yeah, wonderful. I think that that's... is there anything that we didn't cover today that you were hoping to get to talk about?
No, I love talking shock. Like I said, I am constantly in my passion. I'm so blessed, however you want to frame that. You know, I travel all around the country and the world talking, doing keynotes, doing consultation, doing trainings on all my books and stuff. You know, it's really behavior analysis has been very good to me. You know, I see it as a toolbox for helping others because that's my value. Right. It's not just about engaging in behavior analysis. It's about helping people to better help themselves and others. And that's why I think this is the science of helping.
Awesome. Well, that being said, we're so thankful for you coming on and spending time with us today. That was a wonderful conversation, and I really enjoyed getting to know you.
Yeah, you too, guys. Thanks for having me on. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Hopefully it was helpful. If you would like to gain access to this entire video, and actually our entire library of videos, please join our ABA Business Leaders membership. You can find that at www.3pisquare.com.